don't come out with the marketing piece first. Come out with the education on HIT and why you did that way. That's just my criticism, sure. Right? Doesn't mean it's valid, but that's what I would have said. Like, you would have been way better served had you built the case over the last few months on HIT, maybe the last year, HIT. What is it? What's headache score? What's improvement, quality of life? What's this? That's what my advice would have been to you.
Yeah, that's, and I wish we'd had this conversation 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But honestly, we welcome a healthy level of skepticism about anything. I think that optometrists should and have to, because you are the protective barrier between the patient and the industry. And evidence-based medicine has to be produced in order for you to feel confident that you're doing the right thing by your patient. So I think that coming with a more skeptical approach to, is this really what it says it is? Is it really meeting the bar? You know, and those types of things I think are required in order for advancements in innovation to really become the innovation that the industry deserves.
Hello and welcome to the Crystal Podcast on iCode Media. Today I'm going to have a great conversation. I know it's going to be a great because we've already had it with Davis Corley with NeuroLens. And we're going to talk about the HIT information and the headache study within NeuroLens. I was super skeptical when this first came out, but not just after our conversation, actually after diving deeper into the literature about headaches in general, I have started changing my mind about my approach with my patients. So that's what we talk about in this episode. Please enjoy our conversation. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, write a review, share it with your friends, and support those who support us. Thanks so much for sitting down with me today and talking about the NeuroLens headache study. You know, one of the things that I wanted to bring up and kind of have this conversation with you was when I first saw this headache study come out, so it's only been out for a few weeks now,
right?
There was a lot of criticism of that study. And first of all, there was a lot of promotion on NeuroLens's side and excitement in NeuroLens's side. And then the professionals that looked at a lot of this stuff, they came out and said, wait a minute, this isn't that compelling of a study. And I was one of those people, honestly. I was looking at that and saying, I went through the data of the study that you shared and I was underwhelmed. And so let me explain a little bit of why I was underwhelmed and where I think the disconnect was and what I saw that I think other people saw that we misinterpreted actually as we kind of dig into the data. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is I saw a bunch of promotional material that was super exciting. And then I looked at this data that talked about, and we're going to talk about this as well, as I want you to dive deeper into it, but we see the HIT-6 scores. And so as an optometrist, one of my perspectives is, and I think this is shared by a lot of optometrists, is we have the ability to make patients, like with visual acuity, which is our kind of standard threshold. Like if a patient isn't seeing well, I can change the way they see infinite percentage, right? Like if they're 2200, the vast majority of patients, I can make 20/20, right? With a pair of glasses. And so that's kind of our threshold. It biases us as a profession slightly to other things. And so, you know, you apply that to like glaucoma, for example. Mm-hmm. And glaucoma, you know, if I prescribe a medication, I expect about a 30% reduction in intraocular pressure. And so 30%, okay, well, I can do the math there. And then it gets a little bit more challenging if you get into like dry eye, for example. Right. So if with dry eye, you know, I use a symptom score called SPEED. And not everybody uses that. But if I were to tell you, listen, there's a 5-point reduction on this patient's SPEED score, to me, I'm like, that is awesome, right? Mm-hmm. If I go from a patient of a SPEED of 11 to a patient of a SPEED of 6 with some intervention, that's going to take them to a mild or to a early severe symptomatology down to a mild symptomatology, right? Mm-hmm. And so I understand that, but if you talk to a lot of people who don't do a lot of ocular surface disease, they won't understand that there's this 5-point reduction that means a ton.
Right.
And so in any case, that's how I was looking at the HIT information from the study that you had. So I want to pause there. That's a lot of background. But once I started looking and applying like common therapeutics that we use for headaches, commonly accepted therapeutics within neurology that we use for headaches, and how those common therapeutics impact HIT-6 as well, then I can start to see that like this is really compelling. Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about that a little bit. So let me turn that over to you and say, you know, your perspective, David, within NeuroLens has been long. I mean, you have the kind of general long-term view of it. Why did you pick HIT-6 when you're looking at evaluating headaches for patients? What is that? Talk about that a little bit.
So first, really great background. It's kind of a, should the industry and profession be excited about this clinical data and outcome for the profession, or should we be underwhelmed by it? And it kind of falls onto what did we measure ourselves against, which is the HIT or HIT-6. And that stands for the headache impact test. And when we looked at a very clear, validated tool, we found the headache impact test as the one that we chose to use. It was clear it was going to measure one specific thing in the patient's life, not a myriad of different types of symptoms. And in the neurological world, which we have a host of neurological advisors, they told us that if you're looking for a validated tool to measure impact on a patient's life, the HIT-6 score is a very broadly used one when you look at pharmacological alternatives, whether that's, you know, triptans or injections and other things that patients use. And we said, okay, well, that'll give us something to benchmark ourselves against. Even if it's not within the eye care industry, we'll be able to take a look and see how could we perform against options that these patients are currently considering.
Yeah.
So that was one of the big reasons. Pain is subjective, so you do need a validated tool to measure yourself against it. And so the HIT-6 was the choice that we made.
So give me a sense of, you know, in terms of HIT-6 scale, right, in terms of severity or impact on your quality of life, give me a perspective. Because again, like the big headline, again, I'm probably going to butcher this a little bit, but when I read the study, what I recall was that the big headline is NeuroLens drops the HIT-6 by 5 points. Mm. And then you look at this whole scale of HIT-6, and what's the highest on the scale? 68, 60?
It goes up to the 70s, but they cut it off at 60. If you're above 60, 60 plus, they say you are very, very severely hindered by your headaches. They're having a significant impact on the quality of your life. You should go to the doctor ER right now.
Right. So we'll pause that for a second. So what you're saying is, if I have a, even though you have a higher score of 70, if I were going to think about this in terms of severity, those patients over a 60, they need to be in the hospital. They need an emergency room because they're in so much debilitating pain.
It's so serious on their life that they've got to go and make an appointment right now.
Right. And then, so then, okay, that's the 60 threshold. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the studies that I reviewed that were kind of outside of the NeuroLens headache data, they would have patients in that as kind of a starting point baseline for it. But they have patients outside of it as well. So we go from 60 down to what becomes kind of a impactful, but maybe not going to the doctor right away.
So the next chunk is 59 to 56.
Okay.
And it says you're having a substantial impact. You're missing some activities, social, work, and other activities. Then if you drop below 56, 55, you're having a headache, but you're not missing anything. You're not really missing social activities, work, or anything in your life. So going from 60 down to 55, you see that level of change of like, we've got to do something right now. You're having a severe problem to, hey, there's something going on here, but it's not really taking you away from your day to day.
So I think that to me, once I gathered that understanding, and you've articulated even better than when I read it, but when I read that information, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay, well, 5 points goes, takes me from I'm going to the hospital to I can kind of function. Maybe it's not perfect, but I can kind of function. Or I'm having a pretty big impact on my quality of life, but now it's like, yeah, it's not that big of a deal,
right?
And so that's where immediately when I understand that piece of information, now I'm like, oh, okay, well, NeuroLens didn't oversell this, right? They didn't project this idea of like, hey, this is groundbreaking, revolutionary, a term I'm not a huge fan of, but game-changing, right? The reality is that that it is, because you're dropping a patient that can't function to a patient that can function. Mm-hmm. And that gives them a whole bunch of other things that I want to talk about a little bit too, is it gives them a whole bunch of other potential to continue to do the jobs that they're doing. So one of the things I came across, and I'm gonna probably butcher the name. It's been FDA approved now, and I know we're not comparing, and your study didn't compare this, but in order to get me a sense of how impactful that 5 points is, I wanted to start looking at other interventions that are used for headache management. Mm-hmm. And so one of those interventions that was that had a lot of evidence behind was, I'm going to butcher this, but Aranumab. Right. Aranumab. Yep. And so it's essentially it's a monoclonal antibody that works on a very specific pathway within, and I think it's very specific within certain types of headaches. Mm-hmm. And so what I thought was really interesting about that was they looked at how impactful was this intervention in terms of, actually it was more about cost effectiveness, mm-hmm. but they also looked at hit six and they looked at monthly days of free headaches, mm-hmm. right? And so one of the things they found was that the hit six was reduced by 5.6 points, okay? Mm-hmm. So, you know, arguably slightly better
right.
Than Neuralens. But what that translated into was an improvement of days, right? Days without headaches in the month of six. So six additional days without headaches during a month.
Right.
Which now all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay. So if you're talking about a 5 point, even if you're not 6 days, right? It was like 6.3 or 6.6. I can't remember the study exactly, but I'll cite that study in the mm-hmm. in the show notes. The it's like, okay, well, so a reduction in 5.6 HIT points was translating into six additional days without a headache.
Right. And I think that you're nailing it because I've seen a bit of a translation issue where 5 points has sometimes been thought of as just a 5% improvement right. or other things like that, which I understand. That's very natural. The HIT 6 is not a widely optometry used tool. So it makes total sense. But when you break it down and you look at, okay, quality of life impact. If we can take somebody, if they were in your chair,
right,
saying, "Doc, you got to do something for me about this," at that level, and now they're coming back after wearing Neuralens and saying, "Hey, this has been a huge improvement." I, you know, it's not 100% gone, right? It's not eliminated, but I've been to my daughter's wedding. I've been to all these events that I've been, you know, was worried I was going to miss. That's the lifestyle enhancement that we want to have. Or through the optometrist at the annual eye exam.
Yeah.
So it's something that we're passionate about. We've got an opportunity to bring headache management up through the annual eye exam with this type of technology, and we are excited. You know, when we think about, are we excited about this study outcome? To be able to demonstrate in as rigorous of a design trial of this nature that level of improvement and also, we outperformed the control in all analyses. So if we ran a race 100 times, we won 99, right? And,
right.
And the 5 points would equate us to, if we ran a 100-meter dash, we were probably doing a sub-10. Mm. You know? And so it's kind of one of those examples where not only are we consistently going to win, but the outcome that's consistently delivered is going to be very meaningful from a clinical perspective.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the control because I think that that also is part of what we see that would make us kind of question the impact of Neuralens as well. Mm-hmm. So tell me about like just control studies across the board when you look at headache intervention studies. How do as far as prevention studies for headaches, how do controls work in general?
The control in a subjectively measured outcome like headache or other symptom related items where it is a complete patient reported outcome, they are very difficult to manage. I know some of the probably larger drugs and injections on the market, they've failed and lost to the placebo and or control 11 times before they got to the 12th winning outcome. So it's an exceptionally hard thing to manage. I think it's important to note what generally happens in order to manage the control. The patient selection gets so fine and so cherry picking that you kind of know before going in how you're going to do. One of the things that was critical in our study is we said we want to do as best we can to emulate what happens at the annual exam. A score of about 56, which is when they're having, you know, that's moderate mm-hmm. to substantial headaches, is making you miss some of your issues. But we didn't go and say you have to be the worst of the worst. We went with what we thought would be showing up to the annual eye exam with a moderate to severe level of headache, and we wanted them to see that improvement. So when we think about control in other studies, they're seeing 3.1 points even just the placebo and others that were really well designed, really well run studies. So it is very much not uncommon in these types of studies to see an effect in the control of placebo.
Well, I think that's a good point because, I mean, again, I reviewed lots and lots of studies that you all didn't, that you didn't send me. Mm. And the reason I did it is because I wanted to get a sense of what is going on here. And that's almost every study that I reviewed calls that out specifically in their results. They'll call out something like, it is widely known that placebo or that preventative headache intervention studies with a control mm-hmm. are confounded significantly by the placebo effect of the control. And so that's when we look at topiramate. It's when we look mm-hmm. at botulinum toxin. You'll see that same sort of stuff called out every single time, which was, again, illuminating to me. And one of the things that I thought was interesting was the drug that I had just mentioned, aranyumab, that medication, they actually then said it's not practical in clinical practice to provide a placebo or a sham injection mm-hmm. for patients instead right. of providing something else for them, mm-hmm. right? And so when they did their cost-effective analysis, they actually specifically called that. I was like, well, yeah, in that study, in the large clinical trial they did, the control, when they did that, the sham was 3.1, right, reduction. Right. Yep. And then aranyumab was 5.6 or so. So, but they're saying like, yes, it's so much better. That 2.6% was significantly better. But also, you can't measure it from the sham injection because nobody's going to really give a sham injection, right? As soon as you're statistically significantly better,
right.
then we're going to use the intervention. And so I thought that was very helpful for me to understand. And then I started looking at the cost effectiveness of different treatments. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to botulinum toxin as well, because that's becoming more common. But
right.
Well, really, it's been FDA approved for headache treatment since 2010, I believe.
Right.
And so it's not becoming more common. It's quite common. But the other point I wanted to bring up was that was the idea of the reduction of that headache and the impact on cost, right, and mm-hmm. quality of life. So a lot of them start looking at like, okay, if I have this intervention that's going to cost some amount of money. In fact, aranyumab was interesting to read through because they had not gotten it approved yet. Mm-hmm. They knew that they had some additional trials that were showing, and they were saying, okay, well, if we're going to come to market with this, what's the value? What's the cost mm-hmm. that we could charge for this?
Right.
And so what they did was they did a whole this whole calculation on quality of life improvement. And if you can spare this much over some duration of time, and usually it's 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the modeling that they did was if you had a patient that was taking that injection every month, once a month, self-administered, and they were able to just get 2 years of benefit, and then they either had too many side effects or it stopped working, in that 10-year period of time, that the value of that medication was anywhere between $14,000 and $24,000. So then I started thinking like, well, that's pretty significant. One, you have an impactful improvement in mm-hmm. headache-free days, and they're valuing that intervention as like in the tens of thousands of dollars, right? So again, as I apply that to your headache study, mm-hmm. right, we're saying, okay, well, now I have an intervention that is way more cost-effective. Right. Probably not going to have a lot of downside side effects. In my mm-hmm. clinical experiences, it's not. You know, right. we have some patients that don't adapt, but the vast majority of patients adapt and they adjust and they really like it.
Right.
So that's been our clinical experience, is that they have this. But then you look at like downside side effects. I mean, our kind of standard of care, topiramate, your propranolols, there's been studies on those where there's significant side effects where something like 80% of the population within 12 months mm-hmm. stop using those interventions.
Right.
So what does that say to you?
Well, we started our journey as an organization working alongside a neurology center, and where I got a lot of exposure to seeing how these different modalities and treatments not only, you know, were applied in the clinical setting, but also the side effects that come alongside them. And something that we found so attractive about contoured prism technology for these visually induced headaches is it is going to be the most medically safe profile that you can see. when you're being prescribed other treatments, generally the talk goes like this from the doctor. We're going to prescribe you X. We expect it to have some impact. We're not sure, but we do know that top side effects are going to be weight gain, hair loss, depression, and other things of that nature. So we just want to make sure that we're properly disclosed. So we're looking at this from the perspective of, if these visually induced headaches could be solved before they ever got to those types of issues, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing for the patient? And then I think about for the industry, the optometry community in general, to be able to have a solution for their patients in the local community, solve those issues before a patient ever went on a journey, a headache journey, as they call them. Patients hate being on a headache journey. They want the answer as soon as possible. And so from a spectacle lens perspective, for some people, we look like we're a little bit more of an investment, but we're also...
Well, why do you think that is? Why do you think, so when I look at these interventions, Botox as an example, right? Yeah. If I look at that intervention cost, the acquisition cost and the administration cost of botulinum toxin over the course of a year, and this is not like this or that, it's just saying like, just give you a perspective. It's about $6,000, right? A shade under $6,000 a year for those interventions. They're not zero. The literature that I could find was that it's quite a bit safer than some of the other, in terms of side effect profile. Quite a few less side effects than the propranolols and the topiramates. But again, they're a 5.6 reduction in HIT.
Right.
So because of that, I'm thinking, all right, well, that's $6,000 every year.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think patients will accept that? And we seem to have a harder time, maybe... I kind of have an idea, but why do you think it's harder for patients to accept the spectacle lens as an intervention of choice?
It comes down to perception. Spectacles have been around for decades and decades and centuries, and understanding in the local market of what seeing clearly is worth is starting to be established. And going above that, it can be misperceived as, is it worth it? And I think that with the types of things that we're looking to solve in patients' lives, this is the most cost-effective route in order to do it, and it's definitely the safest. And when you think about perception of price, it all comes down to, is it going to be worth it? And I think we have established with this study a one-of-a-kind evidence-based outcome that tells our optometrists that not only is it going to be the best in class, it's going to beat out the control or placebo lens every single time, but it does it in a fashion that is really meaningful to that patient. They're going to see a substantial difference in their life. So when I think about price and is it worth it to the patient, the only person that can tell you that, unfortunately, is the patient.
Right.
So they could read all about this study and all the other studies like we're talking about, but at the end of the day, that patient cares, is it going to work for me? Because they've likely tried a lot of things that haven't worked as well as they wanted them to. So what we look to solve for, on top of just an evidence-based foundation, is we try to solve that by saying, look, we're going to make a new promise to you that glasses are going to do something different in your life this visit. But if it's not fulfilling on the promise of you're going to feel better at some level, and we think it's going to be substantial, then come back. And we're going to make this risk-free for you. This is going to be a guaranteed outcome. If it's working to your satisfaction, then we've fulfilled our commitment to you. If it's not, we've got all the other options readily available for you.
You go ahead. Go ahead.
No, it's what we've done is we've built a foundation of evidence that we think justifies that not only is this going to work, but it's going to work in a meaningful way. But even in the event that there's a need for more confidence in that prescription to the patient, We're gonna back it up with a lifetime guarantee.
Well, I think that's I think there's the interesting part is, I think from a standpoint of professional identity, you made the comment before when we were talking offline about your experience with neurologists, and even in here you demonstrated what kind of the conversations might occur within the neurology room about what their expectations are within headaches, and yet. There's almost this There's not an apology for the fact that those interventions might be expensive. There's not a hesitancy to describe them to the patient, to offer them to the patient. Like, hey, look, we can put you on a beta blocker. And we're going to try that for a little while. And maybe there's going to be some side effects in terms of you're not going to, like all the ones you talked about, you're not going to have as much energy and et cetera, right? But let's try that, right? Mm-hmm. They don't discuss it with their patients because of those potential side effects. They just disclose the side effects. They don't not discuss Botox with the patient because of the potential for cost, mm-hmm. right? They just, this is the option that you have, and we'll see if that is effective for you. Mm-hmm. We need to get to the point of that. Like when I look at all these studies, I went from, first of all, I needed to gain that perspective of what HIT was. Now it actually is making me think about how I'm going to approach those patients in my practice in general. It's like, okay, well, I've got a headache patient. I really probably do want to know more specifically about that severity.
Right.
And I do want to probably, if we're going to manage some of those patients that where NeuroLens is a good fit for that patient in our practice, I'm going to want to follow up with them. It's not just I want to follow up to see if I'm going to tweak the mm-hmm. prescription. It's more about following up so I can say, like, look, you had a headache that was really bad. And now it's not as bad.
Right.
And just like I would with an ocular surface patient, just like I would with, and so it actually kind of changes my perception. And I'm not trying to pin you down on what you might do, but it mm-hmm. actually makes me, and I mentioned this before, wonder if some of the, you know, we have our, a headset for NeuroLens. So full disclosure, obviously we've had a NeuroLens in our practice for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I really do like the headsets. Mm-hmm. I think that's been a nice addition to the ease and implementation for our practice. But, you know, you ask about six different symptoms, only one of those symptoms is headache, and it's not a hit six symptom questionnaire. So mm-hmm. I'm like, man, I would really like to know if those patients report any headache. Maybe I dive a little deeper and give them a better questionnaire mm-hmm. and then follow up with them, right? And from my perspective, I look at it from a billing and coding standpoint. It's like, okay, well, this patient has a headache. Maybe they have convergence insufficiency, or maybe they have exophoria. Mm-hmm. That's a medical condition. When we're bringing that patient back to see how effective our interventions are for those patients, then I can measure that, right? I can measure it. I'm seeing if we're doing things. And it also can give me a perspective of, you know, conversations with patients all the time where, like, you know, we talk about the convergence deficiency treatment mm-hmm. trial, CITT, and we'll discuss vision therapy for those patients, office-based vision therapy with home support. And some of them don't want to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is another option in my mind that we can help those patients and then help their symptoms. And even if we do and we don't help them enough, it can be another compelling reason, like, hey, look, we got this far with this intervention. Now you want to go a little further. Maybe we do need. Maybe now that you didn't want therapy right away, maybe we do need to integrate therapy.
And we would look at it very similarly, where we do not see ourselves as a replacement or a competitor to vision therapy. We think that that's wonderful, but we do see this as an extension of the opportunity for optometry to help knock down some of these symptoms that are related to a more exophoric demand while they're working all day. You know, nowadays we're living within an arm's length of ourselves, our eyes are having to work harder than they've ever had to before in a very near-based setting. And if we can apply a simple but elegant solution like contoured prism to be a preventive measure for what could be visually induced headaches, neck tension, eye strain, really things that are related to visual processing that should be more seamless, more effortless, more efficient, if our lenses can help them sit in that relaxed eye posture, wouldn't that be a wonderful outcome for the patient? Especially if they don't feel like they're having to engage in any risk around it. Because if it doesn't work to their satisfaction, we want to make sure that they're well taken care of. Our data indicates that 97% of people love the outcome that they receive, and the topic never even resurfaces. But we extend that, you know, liberally to make sure that they feel wildly confident in the recommendation.
When you've seen, so I'm sure you've seen other criticisms besides mm-hmm. just mine, looking at that, looking at the study that you've got and looking at, you know, when they say, I think there's a couple things. I mean, one, obviously the things that I think I'd like you to respond to is, well, it seems like a small amount of prism. Mm-hmm. And why does that make such a big impact? What's your response to that? Why do you think it makes a big impact? And when you've been working in neurology clinics and seeing the outcomes? Mm-hmm.
So one of the big things is we're not trying to neutralize the entire phoria or fixation disparity of a patient. What NeuroLens is designed to do is we take a look at their distance alignment and their near alignment, and then we tailor a lens prescription to take as much of the strain and demand that exophoric posture may be placing on them. We don't want to neutralize everything. We're just going to give a assistance to that eye movement from distance to near. And that seems to, and from a relief perspective, really drives the outcome that we're looking for. We found that, you know, 3/4 of the diopter to a diopter change between distance and near is really the sweet spot when we compensate the lenses to make sure that not only is the optical integrity as pristine as we can get it, but it's also enabling for that therapeutic outcome to be fulfilled. And so that was critical in our R&D and design and consumer preference testing and patient preference testing as we took a look at the different ways of adding prism. And most patients find that, you know, in our prescriptions, it is actually about a 75 to 100% increase from their distance prescription to their near prescription. So it almost feels like they're doubling in the treatment effect from distance to near. When you think about it from that perspective, it is small, but it is powerful.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the other side of it is, I think, you know, we can view it from, yeah, so that was one of the points I wanted to bring up. The other point is when you look at common things that you've seen where I think I've thrown out a couple things that I saw that was really critical when I talked, we kind of made some discussion points about it. Mm-hmm. When I was like, this doesn't seem like as big of an issue. What else did you see when people were responding on the study that you released? It was like, that's just a misunderstanding of X, Y, or Z, right? You made the point about, well, it's a 5% reduction.
Right.
But it wasn't a 5% reduction, it's a 5-point reduction. What other things are we missing when we just look at that once over? We talked about the control, right? Mm-hmm. Control arm. Those are the two big ones. And then the perspective of HIT and the impact. I think the other one that I think, and I mentioned this before, but the other one I kind of think through is you didn't look at headache-free days mm-hmm. in the study.
Correct.
Are you going to at some point?
We're always looking at opportunities for research. And it's something that we're going to evaluate and see, do we want to continue to follow on in this path, or are other things equally exciting for our customers and the people that are considering NeuroLens, like reading speed.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be more of a visual performance and enhancement than taking people from a symptom-driven life to a less symptom-driven life. It's almost like the opposite, which is enhancing their visual processing and visual system to work more effortlessly.
Well, I want to pause there too, because that's really interesting. Like in the one hand, I can see that, you know, my colleagues who are really heavily focused on vision therapy, mm-hmm. you know, that I think if I were that way, I almost would, it's like, no, this works. We're going to improve reading speed, or this is too much of an intervention, you know, but then you get the learning centers mm-hmm. that are not, eye care related. They have no, you know, they're working on reading speed. You go to, even just visual performance in general. I'm not sure if you've looked at this, but visual performance related to athletes, mm-hmm. right? Like there
sports
are these
vision.
Huge centers, sports vision that aren't run by optometry, right? Mm-hmm. We've sort of abdicated a lot of that, and that's our own fault, right? Like mm-hmm. I don't do sports vision in my practice, but I probably should. Like we've abdicated that to athletic trainers and to big training facilities. So it starts to. So the amount of information you're capturing within that patient data could, over time, and you're looking at, is that true? You're looking at some of these things of like, how can we know if we do X, Y, and Z, are we improving it?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that we are focused on being a data-driven company. So in our measurement technology, we're measuring all sorts of data points. We look at improvements in different aspects of life, whether that's headache or eye strain or neck tension or discomfort on the computer, or can we improve reading speed? Can we enhance visual performance, whether that's on a sports basis or just a performance basis in general? Can you feel less tired and have a longer work day? All of these things are on the spectrum of things that we believe making your visual processing more effortless and your visual alignment more seamless are really critical. And to your kind of initial question, we believe that headache is a simple thing to look at from instead of looking at all of them at once. And so we started there. But we're going to be piling on because we believe that an evidence-based outcome lens is what the industry could really benefit from. And we're going to continue our research in that regard. So which modalities we go down is something that we're constantly looking at. But we won't stop our research.
Well, one of the things I think is interesting is even just the, you know, I asked you before, are you a headache company? Mm-hmm. And actually one of the things, so the things that illuminated to me, your answer was a little bit more varied. I won't make you give it again, but what was illuminating to me was when I said, when we discussed whether or not this should be on managed vision care.
Mm-hmm.
Should it be on managed vision care?
We believe that this is a product that is akin to what LASIK was for ophthalmology and what premium cataract and IOLs were for ophthalmology. That if you have a product that delivers an outcome that goes outside the norm of vision-related coverage, and it's really worth it to the patient, it drives an outcome that far surpasses their expectations, which is I expect my glasses to make me see clearly. And we believe that we're doing that. We believe that the going outside of the managed vision care is the strategy that we're choosing. It's not that we can't get accepted. We haven't even opened the conversation because what we're building as an organization is a therapeutic benefit that's perceivable at the patient level that will drive a heightened level of prosperity for the practice and differentiation for the practice only because it's worth it. And that's why we guaranteed it. So we don't plan to evaluate the managed vision care route. But
so let me ask you this then. What, if that's the case, how do you respond to the perception both in the office and also from a patient when you say, look, this isn't covered by your insurance? There's this immediate perspective that, like, well, maybe it's not validated. Maybe it doesn't do what they say it's going to do.
Right.
My insurance company doesn't think it's evidence-based, right? These are the thoughts that go through patients' minds
sure.
all the time. I mean, I see it all the time within ocular surface treatments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got FDA-approved treatments for the ocular surface that aren't covered by insurance, and they're quite effective, and yet that is the kind of barrier that patients will have. It's like, well, why isn't it covered by my insurance?
Right.
And I'll usually say, well, it's new technology or your insurance hasn't, you know, but actually I'm probably not approaching it the right way. Maybe, but I don't know the best way to approach it. What are your thoughts?
We hear that all the time, that it hasn't yet received approval and it makes it sound like the product is risky and not yet validated of some sort. And you know, from NeuroLens perspective, we've now done over 250,000 cases, and we've built a body of evidence that we feel very confident in. Not only randomized, double masked crossover trials, but we've got a multitude of other trials that we've run and written white papers on, both in the neurology world and the optometry community. And so the body of evidence that we've amassed over time, both from the commercial patients that have this, we know that we have something that will deliver a significant outcome to the patient at the annual eye exam. The question and perception that always comes back is it worth it? And if I have to go outside of my managed vision care coverage, can I count on it not putting me at financial risk?
Right.
And that's at the crux of most all the conversations, not only in the exam lane, but with the patient and the optical. And we do go outside the managed vision care coverage on purpose because we know that that is worth it to the patient. And if it isn't, we're going to guarantee it.
Yeah, I think to summarize most of my thoughts on this is one, like, I'm hopeful that what occurs from this is that people do dive a little bit deeper into the meaningful evidence behind symptom improvement within headaches.
Mm-hmm.
I think that certainly there's a lot of our patients that are suffering from vision-related headaches even in my practice that I have not I have not really gone deep enough with. You know, I accept when patients tell me, you know, well, yeah, I've got bad headaches, but my chiropractor is addressing them, or my neurologist is addressing them, or like I haven't had the identity, honestly, until I read through a lot of these studies. That so your study was important to me, but your study was important to me because of the findings, but also important to me because it forced me to look at a larger body of literature and be able to now compare what you've done into that larger body of literature. And so it's part of now kind of my identity is becoming like, well, I'm not going to accept a patient that just says, I'm not going to accept the response and drop it when I ask a patient about their headaches and they say, well, my chiropractor is adjusting me for this.
Right.
Or my, so, okay, that's great. But tell me a little bit more about that. Is it ever X, Y, and Z? Do you ever have these other symptoms associated with it? We've likely already done some other things as a screening, but maybe we dive deeper into it. So I'm not just letting that go with like, well, it's somebody else's problem. And I would totally do that. I was on my way on the plane right here, kind of organizing my thoughts about after I had read all of those studies over the last week and now kind of rereading through them on the plane, thinking, well, now I can't, my identity is that I am a place that can't ignore a patient's headaches.
Right. Yep.
So now I'm compelled to take additional steps. Now, whether that translates into a huge increase in action on my part, I think it will require work. It will require continuing my process, even changing our protocols when we're addressing that. Where before, I may just be prescribing a lens and say, seeing you whenever we're going to see you for all the other stuff.
Right.
But but actually, as I think about it and I reflect on it, it's like, I probably will. This doesn't come from you, I know. And I'm not trying to make it more complicated for anybody that is thinking about NeuroLens. But from my perspective, I look at this, I'm like, well, I'm gonna ask an HIT6. And then I'm gonna follow up with that patient at some prescribed interval that makes logical sense. I don't know what that is yet, but I've got to do the research on it. And then I'm gonna repeat that.
Right.
And then and that patient likely has some other medical diagnosis that I'm gonna provide value for that patient and value to the healthcare system. And then what that's going to force me to do is it's going to force me to say, okay, this did so much help. What else can we do to do a little bit more help? Or who do I need to get in touch with to take that other step? So I think that's really what was exciting to me as I was coming over here thinking like this information and the ability to dive deeper into the studies can absolutely change my practice and change my practice for the benefit of my patients. So that's what I think is really exciting about this.
And part of that, what makes me want to ask you a question. Is
yeah, go ahead.
So when we look at the study and you took an initial look and you saw, you know, hey, look, this doesn't sound like it's got the oomph that I was hoping for. It's, you know, maybe even underwhelming. We were sitting over here feeling like, all right, this is a very powerful evidence-based outcome win for optometry, and the annual eye exam could really show significant benefits in this area. We effectively, and I think about what maybe have kind of been the thing that started to kind of change your perspective on things. Because I think the key features were that NeuroLens was best in class in all the analysis groups. We won against the control. So we always were best in class. We showed the 5 points of reduction, which when you look at the scale means that the impact on the quality of life is going from, you know, you need to go to the doctor ASAP right now, you're having a serious issue, to, yeah, you may be having a dull headache, but you're not missing any life as a result of it. It also, I think, the amount of change that these patients can see is really powerful.
Yeah.
And I think you probably had some personal experiences, but are those the things that really kind of address?
Yeah, I think what was really helpful for me is, so I initially thought, I initially thought I'm going to rip into these guys. I'm going to rip into David. And not like rip into you in a bad way, but I thought all the same things. I read the study, but I didn't have perspective on what the symptom improvement meant. And once I understood that, and then I understood the other interventions that are being used. Mm-hmm. And again, I think the listener should absolutely go and look at those studies and compare it to what people are doing. If you are sitting in a headache clinic all day long, your perspective about improvement for patients is completely different. And that shouldn't minimize like that 5-point reduction. What I'm not saying is like, oh, it's it's nothing, but anything is better. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, like, yeah, when you look at it, that 5-point reduction can be life-changing for some patients. Mm-hmm. And so when you understand that, it's like, well, 5 points doesn't mean anything if I'm telling you 5 points from, you know, I got 100 or a 95% right. on my test. It's like, yeah, you got an A. It doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what we're talking about. So I think what was really helpful is for me to get the perspective of what does that questionnaire actually mean in terms of quality of life?
Right.
And then how do I compare that to other interventions that are widely accepted by insurance companies, by neurology, that, and then what are those costs? So that was, in my mind, that's the thought process. Like, okay, let me get a handle on what HIT does.
Right.
What does that translate into headache-free days mm-hmm. in terms of a month? And I mean, if you're talking about, could I give a patient 6 days of headache-free days a month that they didn't otherwise have? Mm-hmm. To me, I don't have headaches hardly right. at all. But when I have a headache, and if I could extrapolate that moderate headache out to 15 days, in a lot of these cases, those patients mm-hmm. are having 15 days, 22 days of headaches a month, and now you can eliminate 6 of those, like that would seem to me to be very compelling.
Right.
So that was my kind of thought process of like when I'm kind of organizing my thoughts, is like, holy cow, like this is a big deal.
Right.
So I hate to go from being like, I'm going to give them a hard time about this, to being drinking the Kool-Aid. But those are the things that I thought about this that I think are really clinical helpful. And I would encourage the listeners and my colleagues to kind of scour through the data, look at what other things are doing, so that we can have a perspective of like, this is what, in the headache community, mm-hmm. these are good improvements.
Right.
These are the improvements, and these are the numbers that improve patients that are clinically significant, statistically significant, and meaningful on a right. patient's quality of life. And that's, for me, what made me so excited on the plane today. So right. I hate that I'm drinking the Kool-Aid there, but I would just have said, look, don't come out with the marketing piece first. Come out with the education on HIT and why you did that right. way. That's just my criticism,
sure.
right? Doesn't mean it's valid, but that's what I would have said. Like, you would have been way better served had you built the case over the last few months on right. HIT, maybe the last year. HIT, what is it? What's headache score? What's improvement, quality of life? What's this? That's what my advice would have been to you.
Yeah, that's, and I wish we'd had this conversation 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But honestly, we welcome a healthy level of skepticism about anything. I think that optometrists should and have to, because you are the protective barrier between the patient and the industry. And evidence-based medicine has to be produced in order for you to feel confident that you're doing the right thing by your patient. So I think that coming with a more skeptical approach to, is this really what it says it is? Is it really meeting the bar? And those types of things, I think, are required in order for advancements in innovation to really become the innovation that the industry deserves. So one of the things that we're going to be completely focused on is continuing our advancement of innovation pipeline. We want to make not just NeuroLens a little bit better, we want to make it enormously better over the next years to come. And that's one thing I would want everyone to understand about this organization, is we believe we're creating a new category of therapeutic lenses. We believe that we have an evidence-based outcome that is unmatched in spectacles. And we also believe that we are going to continue in a very rigorous manner this innovation and evidence-based outcome research and output.
Well, David, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. I think this was going to be great for our audience to kind of think through this stuff. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thanks. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.